Hello and welcome to episode number 9 of Splash Pad, a TCU On a Side podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Monday, January 27. The number 9 ranked Horned Frogs spent time on the road and at home this week and went 1-1. So they're now 20-2 overall, including 8-1 in the Big 12. Gonna welcome in JD. How are you doing this week, JD?
Good, Tori. I'm really excited to be here. Like you said before we started recording, it's a really exciting podcast. You even talked about it when we were at the game yesterday about how excited you were for this. And we've got a lot to discuss on this one. I mean, TC related, I'm sure we'll touch a little bit nationally. There's, a lot that's just going on with women's basketball. I mean, it seems like every week I can't record a podcast without you without saying the words a new program has, like, mark has been reached. And
Yep.
it's just every week it's nonstop, and I'm so excited. I can't wait for it.
No, I am. I'm so excited about this podcast, what we're going to talk about. Like you said, we're going to talk TCU, we're going to talk national. There's stuff that happened in the Big 12 that just has huge implications. And like you said, every week it's something new that this program has done, something big, some firsts. And I mean, the big first this week is beating Baylor for the first time since 1990. And that is incredible. And we'll get into detail on that, but what a good week. I think even though TCU went 1-1, lost to Oklahoma State, I still think this was a really good week for the team.
It was, and we're about to dive into the Oklahoma State one, but I'll mention it now. Is it's something we expected to happen, right? We mentioned that they had been teasing a loss repeatedly with their second half performance, and we expected it to happen, and it happened. And at the time, I was like, "Well, I mean, you knew that was going to happen." But then at the end of the day, I was just kind of like, "You know what? Oklahoma State's not a bad team," and TCU continued to have their first half success, which I, if you're gonna lose a game and it's gonna be because you had a bad second half, whatever. If it's because you pulled a men's basketball team, and I'm sorry, Nick, because I know you're listening to this, because you texted me about last week's when I mentioned the men's team. But I mean, I'd rather a team lose like this than just completely no show, like the men's did against UCF. Like this is a lot. I mean, it's harder to swallow at the time, but it's easier to overall handle as the week goes on.
Yeah, well, because there's very specific, not that you can't learn from a blowout, because you can, but I think there's a lot more specific things you can take from a close loss where you can be very specific and say, in this situation, when we're in it again, do this. Hopefully the outcome looks different. So let's dive right into this Oklahoma State game. TCU went to Stillwater on Wednesday of last week, lost 60 to 59. Sedona Prince had 22 points, 13 rebounds, and 3 blocks. Interesting thing was to me, she had 16 points and 10 boards at halftime. So, like you talked about, JD, super dominant first half performance for TCU as a whole, especially on offense. Sedona did exactly what she was needing to do, and she didn't do any, hardly anything in the second half. And I attribute that to a couple things. One, TCU kind of went away from her, but two, Oklahoma State did a really nice job defending her and just giving her different looks in the second half.
Yeah, it's something even when we talk about the Baylor game is Sedona didn't really even do much in the first half of Baylor. And that's not the trend, right? But it seems like that's kind of the thing with Sedona. And it's not even, I don't mean it in a negative way when I say this. It's just more like she is a very, very dominant half player. And it's something that potentially we talked about early in the season when you're only running 7-8, girl rotation, it's gonna be hard to play a full 40 minutes, especially at the midpoint of conference play. If you've already played 6 weeks of non-conference games, like, Campbell talked about it afterwards, and so did Baylor's head coach about how it's, I mean, these girls are starting to get worn down a little bit. I mean, they've been doing this forever. Like, look at Haley. She didn't really even have any time off because she was preparing for the Olympics. Like, there's just kind of a point where, you know what? I guess toward that, my question is would you rather have a good 4 quarters from Sedona, or like a really dominant first half like she had against Oklahoma State?
I think you'd almost rather have, a half or three quarters where she is absolutely dominant, does exactly what you expect of her, and then maybe a half or a quarter where she's good, she's effective, but she's not nearly as dominant because at least in TCU's case, you have enough pieces around her to fill in those gaps. And that's what we saw against Baylor. Agnes Emanopoulou started lighting things up in that first quarter. That's when she did most of her scoring, but that's when Sedona was kind of ineffective. And so you have enough pieces to kind of fill in if Sedona is having an off quarter or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what you're looking at, right, with this team as a whole is you look at the halftime score and you're like, wow, they're gonna finally get their blowout. And then but that's because all, the three-headed monster of HVL, Madison Connor, and Sedona, and then throw Agnes and Taylor Bigby playing lockdown defense, like for that entire first half, they're giving 150% of their effort. And it's gonna take a toll on them. Oklahoma State was just the one offensive team that we knew had the capabilities of being able to score a lot of points when they really needed it.
And like I talked about last week, I said to me, it's just those third quarter kind of let ups were just starting to kind of catch my eye. And it did finally catch up with TCU. And like you said, losing Oklahoma State's not a bad loss.
Yeah.
They're going to be in and out of the top 25, and if they can string together some wins, I think they'll stay in the top 25.
And I don't even think, I think we're kind of on opposite ends where we're worried about the second half because you're worried about more that third quarter slip up. And I'm not worried about like kind of the overall, but more there seems to be every game where it's a 3-4 minute drought every single game in the fourth quarter without points. And I mean, if that drought just doesn't happen, let's say you even score 6, 8 points during that time. Like you're still winning pretty comfortably around about teams you've beaten, and then you beat Oklahoma State pretty comfortably in this one.
Yes. No, I completely agree. And I think that's maybe a better way to say it is it could be a third or fourth quarter. There's just they go a couple minutes without scoring, and that tends to be what gets them in trouble. And that's really what you saw against Oklahoma State in that second half. Now, granted, Oklahoma State, I thought, turned up the defense and played really well. I mean, Oklahoma State barely broke 60 points. So both teams played really good defense. It was just a matter of who could get a little more offense there in that second half. Haley Van Lith had 12 points, 4 assists, and 2 blocks. She also had 4 turnovers. That was, I think, something that kind of played into Oklahoma State being able to get back into it. OSU had a couple of players step up. Staley Hurd, as expected, scored 17 points. And then Jaden Wooten really stepped up for them with 14 points. And then Tana Magasa, who was battling with Sedona, had 6 blocks. She only had 2 points, but she had 6 blocks. And that, to me, was such a difference in that second half. Gave OSU that down low presence, bothered friends, like just really allowed them to step up their defense a little bit in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's as much as we talk about TCU playing as well as they do. I mean, Oklahoma State really, I mean, like Nick also said, I'm going to bring him up again. He mentions how does Oklahoma State lose to Houston? And that'll be one of the, especially if Oklahoma State can continue this trend that they're at, it'll be one of the most puzzling things by the time the end of the season comes around. The only thing that really gives me slight concern over this game is that you don't get Oklahoma State again, right? If both teams were to finish with only one loss, TC would not be the one seed. They would finish as the two seed. So that's the only thing. I mean, I get it. It's just sucks.
Yeah, it does, 'cause you they had the 15-point lead, and then they allowed an 18-2 run by Oklahoma State in the final 6 minutes. And that's where you're talking about if that could be an 18-6 run, TCU wins. Like it's those little things. And that was something following the Baylor game, I kind of asked Coach Campbell about, because that was really the first opportunity we'd had since the OSU game, just to ask questions. And I kind of just asked about in general this trend lately. He said, this team's growing. They're learning together. He's learning as a coach. There were some things in the Oklahoma State game he said that he might handle differently in that second half. So I think this whole team is growing, players and coaching staff. And the fact that he can acknowledge those things and say that shows me they're going to improve on those things. And like you mentioned earlier, these players are given 110% in the first half, so being able to make those adjustments to where fatigue and things like that doesn't quite hit as hard in the second half. I think we'll see some of those adjustments moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that kind of gets lost in all of the success that TCU has had this year is that Mark Campbell's still in his first head coaching job. He's still a relatively young coach. Probably my favorite thing that he said, as he looks over me, if you're watching this, my favorite thing he said was, like, yeah, these girls have all the veteran experience that you could ask for. But much like, he was mainly talking about Haley, but it can also be attributed to Madison and Sedona with it's like being a new quarterback and having to learn a new offensive system. It's still a lot to learn, and it's still not going to be completely installed until you get game time and you get more reps with it. So it's still early, right? Like, that feels weird to say because you're at the midpoint of the conference. That's why I hesitated, but it's still early. I mean, respectfully, like, who kind of cares about January performances?
Right.
It matters of how are you the hot team at the right time. So it's kind of really what it's going to come down to.
Well, and that's why coaches are always talking about we're looking at March. We're trying to peak in March. We're everything we do is about March. And there's a reason for that. Because yeah, you don't want to go into your conference tournament as the, 12 seed out of 16 teams and have really no shot to make the tournament. But you also don't want to stress out too much. Because then you're just not going to be focusing on the right things to be peaking in March. It's a fine balance that, I think TCU's kind of trying to hit that spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, and TCU's surprisingly, like, their schedule looks really, really good when you look at it as a whole. You've got a loss to a ranked Oklahoma State and basically the number one team in the country right now, South Carolina. You got to win over number three. You got to win over NC State. You got to win over a top-ranked Baylor. You got to win over Utah. Like, I don't know. I think it's just there's no reason to panic, especially based off of the performance we saw Saturday or Sunday against Baylor that we'll talk about shortly. But I was I frustrated? Yeah. But I wasn't really ever like, man, this is going to be the downfall of the team.
Yeah, no, and that was kind of my reaction right after the game was this hurts, but I think it was necessary. We've been talking about we expected them to lose one in this 5-game stretch. Which one it was, we didn't know. Thought it might be on the road just because of the way the schedule was. And if this is the one loss that they get in this 4-game in this 5-game stretch, it's a solid loss.
Yeah, 4-1 is more than acceptable. Basketball is basketball. Any team can beat anyone. I mean, not maybe TCU, but most other teams, they can beat anybody. Like, it's just exciting to watch. I don't know. I guess is NC State probably the closest four quarter game we've seen out of them this year?
I think so because Notre Dame, they had to do
Yeah,
such a
Notre
big
Dame
comeback.
was not a good first half,
No, I.
which is the only time, minus South Carolina, but that was a bad game overall. Like, that was the bad first half they had of the year, and potentially only.
Yeah. No, I think NC State's the closest thing to a complete game they had. And they had their kind of couple minutes in there where they didn't do what they needed to on offense, but they did enough on defense to keep NC State kind of at an arm's distance. So it's one of those things that's this team can do it. They've got the horses to do it. They've got everything they need to do it. It's just a matter of putting it all together, I think. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and jump into that Baylor game. So TCU yesterday beat Baylor 80-75. Sedona Prince led the scoring attack once again, 24 points, 14 rebounds, 3 blocks. Agnes Evan-Enopu also had a double-double, 12 points and 10 rebounds. Haley Van Lith and Madison Carter also had double-digit scoring. Haley with 19, Madison with 21. And Madison also grabbed 8 rebounds. She has grown so much just all over the court as a playmaker and kind of looking for ways to get involved outside of shooting. That's been a lot of fun to watch her grow.
It's just the diversity, right? And it's again, I'm going to say it. Gamble talked about it afterwards, but like, even a player like HVL being able to change how she was has been used at her previous stops to how she's being used now, and she's more than happy to, do whatever the team needs. Same with Madison Connor. Like, she had the exact quote. Like, she was like, "Yeah, I want to make three pointers, but like, I'm trying to expand my game," and we're really, really seeing that hone in. And it's coming against big games. It's not like you're playing non-conference, Texas State or anyone that you can kind of stat pad a little bit. Like this is coming against a top 25 team. So it's just really good and like a great confidence booster for what she can do the rest of the season.
And she's someone we talked about earlier in the season where if she can kind of fill out her game a little bit, TCU just gets that much more dangerous. And I think we're starting to see that develop and come into play. And I think it's going to be really important as you go to Iowa State, you go to Kansas State, and then once you hit the tournament, I think it's going to be really important. Some notables from this game, as mentioned earlier, it's the first win against Baylor in 37 games. So they were 0-37 against Baylor entering this game. So just as Coach Campbell said afterward, it's historic. It's another first for this program. And someone asked Sedona about that after the game. What's it like being a part of a program that's doing all these firsts and first time since and all these things? And she said, it's special to be a part of that. And she said she would put this one kind of maybe her top two or three moments of the season. And so naturally she was asked, well, what are the other ones? She said the Notre Dame game and then Ella Hamlin getting put on a scholarship. And I just thought that was so cool and just sums up how special this team is that her teammate, who a year ago walked onto this team when TC was frankly a little desperate, her being put on a scholarship is a top moment for her this season. That to me just encapsulates this team right there.
Yeah, it's the same thing going back, right? Like these girls aren't playing for the name on their back. They're playing for the name on the front. They're playing for each other. And it's, I think that's just kind of, that was the big question mark going into the season, right? Was you have Sedona Prince, who was the original face of women's basketball. You have Madison Connor, who basically was putting the team on her back a lot last season by herself because she didn't really have much around her with the whole injury situation. And then you have Haley Van Lith, who is one of the biggest women's basketball brands, plays in the Olympics, and you're like, how are they going to gel? How is a young coach who's barely in his second year going to be able to handle all of this? And Mark Campbell's done exactly what you want and basically had them play their style of game, but it benefits each other, and now they end up playing for each other. It's just comforting to see, and it's one of those that like when you get a team to buy in, the ceiling just expands so much more on what you're capable of that year.
Yeah, well, and Campbell keeps talking about this team is barely scratching the surface of what they can do. There's so much more that they want to do, and it does. It all stems from their willingness to buy in to what he's preaching, and that's really hard when you have a lot of people who are extremely talented. And so it just, I know we harp on it, but this is a very special team. Very special.
I want to circle back on a question real quick now that you
Yeah.
mentioned that. Is this officially the best team in program history? I asked it whenever we, after they had beat Notre Dame. And I want to circle back, especially after, because I wanted to wait till the Baylor game to see if they at least won one of them. I mean, is this the best team in program history now?
I really want to see what they do in the NCAA tournament before I give you a definite answer, but I'm leaning yes. It's going to take a lot to convince me no. Like, you've got so much individual talent on this team that is kind of setting their egos aside, which is just so hard, especially in this day and age with NIL and transfer portal and all these things. Yeah, I think we are. We're up to this point watching the best team in program history, potentially.
Yeah, I finally back on my What Did We Learn weekly articles that I, write for our website. And at the bottom of it, when I give my little outro, I basically said, like, this is like if you haven't been to a game, you have, I believe it's four or five more chances to go see this team before. I mean, that you can see that potentially if they host in March, but tickets will be expensive. Everyone will be going then. Like, this isn't something that you could ever see again. I mean, there's alumni who have waited 36 years for TCU to beat Baylor women's basketball. Like, there is a solid opportunity that you never see a women's basketball team like this again at TCU. Like, it's not a given. So, I think whenever I said that, I kind of took this step back and was like, look, if I'm willing to put this out there, then like, I think this is my, you know what? Like, you give me the Mount Rushmore of TCU athletic teams. Like, 2022 football team, 2014 football team, 2018 baseball team, and then 2024, 25 women's basketball team. That's my Mount Rushmore. And like, I'm willing to lay by that shield.
And I think you'd be hard pressed to, find some other teams. I think there are some, especially if you dig deeper, in the history books, but at least in modern, I'd say since 2000, those probably are arguably the four best teams, kind of the Mount Rushmores. Yeah. I think you're right. Well, and to that point, there were 5,415 fans in attendance. And both coaches commented on the atmosphere following the game. Baylor's head coach said Fort Worth should rally around this team. Like, this is a, even she said, this is a special team. This is a team that you want to come watch. And Campbell was very complimentary on the atmosphere, and it was electric. And that just, I think, adds to this whole experience was the attendance yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it's so nice to see the growth of what it has, even from the beginning of the season, right? Like, even against NC State, like, there were people there. There were a lot of people there, but they weren't into the game like I've seen them into the game. I mean, the Utah game was another top 25 team, but it was a small crowd. Like, this was a really good crowd for a Sunday afternoon where it's muggy and rainy. And they were into the game. Like, it was the crowd pops were electric. Like, I mean, I was sitting on the baseline for the last 6 minutes of the game, and the crowd would pop and I'd get chills. And I'm like, I couldn't imagine playing an environment like that. And it's what Mark Campbell talked about whenever he, and we circle back to the Oklahoma State loss, was it's hard to win on the road. He talked about how great the atmosphere in Stillwater was when they lost to Oklahoma State, and like, the atmosphere definitely played a huge role in the game against
Yeah,
Baylor.
it did. Well, and it was neat too because there was a fair amount of Baylor fans there, but they were by no means the majority, which I think in the past has not been the case.
Yeah, it's what Baylor's coach said. She was like, this is the first time that it hasn't been mainly Baylor fans in the stands.
Yeah, and so I think you have that. So you just so many things about that was such a fun, exciting atmosphere that makes it hard for visiting teams to win, especially when you get into a tight game. I pulled up really quick the attendances from the NC State and Utah game. So NC State was 3,200 and Utah was just over 2,700. So a lot smaller than this Baylor game. And I get it, rivalry. So people who might not ordinarily come are going to come because it's Baylor and all these things. But I think they're also starting to see what this team can do. So really fun to see that atmosphere. So a little bit more kind of things to talk about with the game. TC led the entire game. They had that 22-point third quarter lead. And then Baylor was able to cut the lead to three in the final minute. And again, TCU had just a couple dry spells. They just kind of let Baylor get in a run there at the end of the third quarter and never really slowed them down. And to me, that's what got them in trouble was there at the end of the third quarter because Baylor didn't have a field goal for the first 5 minutes of the third quarter. And so you're just looking at like TCU's gonna run away with this thing. They don't have to keep the pedal to the metal all the way, but just don't, completely let it up. And they couldn't quite find that middle ground.
Before I talk on this point real quick, I did pull up the men's basketball stats because now you had me intrigued. They had 50 less fans than men's basketball had against Utah. And against Kansas, they only had 6,000 fans there. So to nearly draw the same crowd as a men's basketball team playing Kansas at home and a top 15 ranked Kansas, that's a huge mark for what is the community is seeing and fans are seeing. So that's really cool. I just wanted to pull those numbers up real quick.
Well, that's a
But
great comparison.
the first half defense every single week continues to just be like, this is the team that if they can play four quarters is can compete with any other team in this country. And I don't even care if it's South Carolina. Their defense is that good, and it showed against Baylor. Like, Baylor genuinely looked uncomfortable in the entire, especially they started to get a little bit of a rhythm in the second quarter, but especially throughout all of the first quarter, they just looked like they couldn't breathe. And that's kind of what it's so refreshing to see. Like, every week I can be like, you know what? Like, they had the turnovers. TCU couldn't not turn the ball over.
And they were up 9-0,
Yeah.
4 minutes into the game.
It's what, you know, Mac Walters, one of the members of our staff, he was like, because I wasn't at the game yet. I was on the way, and he was like, TCU has, you know, nine turnovers. And I was like, that's okay. He's like, that's okay. And I was like, when you're playing defense this well, like, obviously it's not okay that you have that many turnovers, but if you're playing defense this well and you're pressing the ball that much, like, hey, you're gonna work it out. Like, that's, you can make mistakes like that when your defense is playing that well.
And for as well as the defense played, Baylor only recorded four turnovers. That to me is the craziest part of that. Like, they, from a turnover standpoint, they completely beat you up. Because TCU had 15, or I'm sorry, 16. They had
Yeah.
15 assists, 16 turnovers.
And Baylor averages 17 a game.
Yeah, so Baylor, credit to Baylor, they played about a clean a game from a turnover standpoint as you can. But they couldn't shoot the ball, to your point, worth anything in the first half. So it, yeah.
It was a weird game. Like, I'm genuinely way more excited about the second matchup between these two than I am kind of about the TCU Kansas State that's coming up too. Just because this game felt so weird in all facets of the game. But, you know, it's like, what are you going to expect next time?
Because you, I struggle to believe Baylor's going to get down by 22 points the second time around because they know, oh, we can beat this team. We have the horses to play with this team and potentially beat them. And TCU's going, okay, we have the horses to build a lead on them, but they're not going to let us do that again. So it's going to be an interesting to see how that collides at the end of the season.
It's also something even to think about more so with the Big 12 tournament, right? Like, this is a team that they could potentially play a third time. And I mean, TCU's, there's some teams, like we talked about with Oklahoma State and Kansas State, that they're only going to play one time. They're not going to have as much time playing against each other that, like, it could play a big factor in a Big 12 tournament game.
No, this it was, like you said, it was just an interesting, kind of weird game in a lot of ways, but a lot of fun to watch. Like we talked about earlier, still have yet to put together that complete game, but I think they're gonna get there. And I think if they can play that complete game and you play South Carolina again, I don't know that you beat them, but I think it's competitive at least through the end of the third quarter. I think it looks way different. You know, and a small part of me wants them to have a shot at South Carolina in the NCAA tournament. And if they did, it'd be pretty deep into the tournament. But there's a small part of me that's like, I want to see them play South Carolina again, just to see how much they've grown.
Oh, sorry you think that. I would never wish for that, especially with what South Carolina's playing now. I also just think TCU matches up way better against a team like UCLA.
Agree.
That
Yes.
I think South Carolina isn't, obviously, like, we have the top end talent they have, but I think it's more a depth issue with South Carolina TCU, and also just a schematic thing where Dawn Staley's, doesn't matter who you are. She's gonna outcoach you, and that's not even an insult to anyone. I mean, she's the best in the game and has the biggest women's basketball coaching contract in history for a reason. I do think it's really, really intriguing when you think about, in the grand scheme of things, that TCU has a win over Notre Dame, who's sitting at number three. Like, and it was a really good game by both teams. And I just think that if they can put this four quarters together, like you were saying, there's no team that can beat them, bar none, besides South Carolina. And I think that gives me so much hope that I haven't felt with TCU sports in 2 years, that I don't know, it scares me.
The only other thing from the game that I thought was just interesting, Baylor's coach talked about a little bit, was the refs were they were just uneven on both sides. I hate bringing this sort of stuff up, but I thought it was odd that Agnes got ice after her first free throw for something that the crowd never learned what it was. It wasn't a timeout. The refs just went to go talk about something, and then she shot her second free throw. There was just weird stuff like that that just added to kind of the atmosphere of the game.
Yeah, they missed the obvious out of bound call. Like, look, I get it. You gotta call things in the game, but like, and I get it, they were inconsistent for both teams, but like, if you ask fans 100 out of 100 times, they'd rather watch the girls play than watching just every little thing get called. And Baylor's coach even talked about that. She was like, you know, she's like, I'd much rather watch two elite players just play it out and battle it out than they're scared to do anything because they're gonna get called. And I think that's just like kind of been the underlying theme of most conference games. It's just been like sometimes they're calling the little things, and then sometimes they decide not to. And you have to be consistent on that. It's not fair to both teams to, oh, can I, you know, maybe do a little bit of a push off on this one? Well, he called it earlier, but you know, TCU just got away with that last possession. Like, you got to be really consistent on that, or just don't call it at all.
So that was just a weird thing, but I mean, you could tell Baylor's coach acknowledged that it was a thing, but she was like, no, we didn't do enough to win. So I do like that neither coach looked at that as a crutch or anything like that. They were both like, who won is who won. So it's just one of those things I think just added to the game, kind of add another element. Want to look at the HVL assist tracker on her quest for 500 career assists and 185 in a season, which would be the TCU single season record. She did hit the 500 career assist mark against Baylor with her first dish of the game. Just after the game, Sedona Prince, Madison Connor just talked about how happy they are for her, and she just says has grown so much as a passer and just such a good job finding them. Campbell talked about she and we've talked about this earlier, but she was just willing to change. And he said, quote, it doesn't surprise me. The kid loves the game of basketball. So just really, it's really special for Haley Van Lith to achieve that. And she needs 58 more to break TCU's single season record. So now we're going to jump into Iowa State. TCU will play them next Sunday, February 2nd at 3 p.m. on FS1. So the team does get kind of a week off to recover and rest. As Coach Campbell said, the coaches are out recruiting, so it's not really a week off, but I think it's a much needed just time for the players to relax a little bit.
Which, first of all, let me say that was really good to hear. There were a lot of people who said, oh, Campbell's not going to recruit. He's only going to get girls out of the transfer portal. It's not how the sport works. I don't want, I mean, I'm sorry. You still got to recruit.
Well, and he signed three high schoolers during the season. Like yes, the portal's helpful. And I think in TCU's case, it was a good jump start to get where they wanted to go. And now he's got things jump started, and so now he can start building the way he wants. So the Cyclones come in with a 15-7 record, 6-3 in the Big 12. Their last game was a 90-56 win over UCF. Their three losses are West Virginia, Utah, and OSU. A little bit of a deep dive on kind of their scores in those games. In those losses, their opponents have averaged 79 points. So, and then I lost my note about their scoring overall. But so basically, if you take out those three teams, they're doing a good job on defense. The problem is when they play kind of those elite teams in the conference, they really struggle to slow them down offensively.
It's kind of the thing, right? With like, it's how when you think about women's basketball, and I, you know, I've mentioned it a few times, is that it's a top heavy thing. No matter the conference, you play Iowa State just happens to fall in that middle of the pack where they play teams like Houston and, you know, Arizona and teams like that where they can just, hey, our girls are just a little bit better than you. We're going to win, no problem. And then, but your girls just aren't good enough to beat that top tier talent. But that's not to say that this is an easy game for TCU in any
No,
means.
no. Iowa State looks like they run kind of so they have a center and a forward who are their leading scorers. So they kind of run more of a two big system. Audie Crooks averages 22 points and 7.3 rebounds per game. She is the top scorer in the Big 12 since conference play started, and Sedona's right behind her as far as scoring goes. And then Addie Brown is a forward, 14.5 points and 7.5 rebounds per game. Addie and Sedona are two of the top five rebounders since Big 12 play started. So this is going to be a battle of the bigs, and I would not be shocked if Aaliyah Roberson gets a few more minutes in this game, just because you know Iowa State's going to run this two forward center forward system.
Been saying, I want to see it. I just want to see a full game out of it. I mean, as close to a full game as you can. I obviously understand you're going to have a little bit to stretch your bench out a little bit more. But I do think it is very interesting because they're not like, Audie Crooks is in the traditional, what you would call a center. She's a stretch big. I mean, she's 6'3". So I do think that having Sedona's height is going to play a really nice factor in this one. Just because Iowa State doesn't really have anyone that they're going to run out there, at least close to what they're comfortable with, that can compete with Sedona's height. And then, I mean, on the other end of it, like, I know Agnes is a few inches shorter, but she's going to fight like hell, no matter who you are. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they're like, Agnes, you're going to run our other, we're going to run a two big system, and she runs as the other big.
I could see that as well. I could really see her and Aaliyah. Maybe Aaliyah spells her a little bit or something like that, but I think you're 100% right. Agnes is probably going to be the four in this game. She's not afraid to make those hustle, don't show up in the stat box type of plays. And I think against a team like Iowa State, you're going to need a fair amount of that.
Yeah, I wonder if you see a good amount of zone from TCU on defense in this one.
You might. They do have some shooters, one of whom TCU fans are going to recognize. It's Sydney Harris. She played for TCU last season, and if she caught fire, you were in trouble. Like she had a couple games where she'd hit four, five, six threes. She's done that for Iowa State this year. So you might see them do zone, but that's where I could see them not doing it because they have these shooters. They have someone like a Sydney Harris, and if you want to be able to match up with Crooks and Brown, you can kind of do it in a zone depending on what type of zone you run. But I mean, they matched up against Oklahoma State. They ran man for a good chunk of that game and it worked. So I kind of trust TCU when they play man. So I wouldn't
Yeah, I
be
guess my
surprised.
issue with like the running man here is like when you're running a true stretch big, I don't even want to say it's a stretch big because it just feels like you're running a small lineup is what it feels like. I mean, we know Sedona is a very dominant presence in the middle, but if she's having to play the perimeter the whole time, how much, is that going to play an impact on being able to. I know I've talked about how good the defense is, but I do think having her in the middle really makes a big difference whenever a player on an opposing team decides they want to try to drive the ball then.
Yeah, trying to clog up the middle there, and yeah, I guess so they can't just get in there. Yeah, I could see that. I could also see them going, man, just because they have shooters like Sydney Harris, and you don't want to let them get hot. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see which one they like to do. Yeah. So Iowa State, since Big 12 play has started, averages just under 78 points a game. Iowa State and TCU are kind of your top two scoring teams in Big 12 play. And Iowa State also shoots 48% from the field. That's second behind Kansas State. So they're going to put up points. There's no doubt that they're going to put up points. But if you can put up points and just slow them down just a little bit, you're going to be able to win. And that's kind of what we've seen, like we've talked about from TCU lately, is they're going to slow you down just enough to get the distance they need to win a game. And I think that's kind of what you can kind of do against Iowa State and get away with it.
Yeah, I don't care if this is a close game down on the wire. Just play four quarters. Play 3 and a half full quarters. and I'm more than okay with it. You get a week off, so very interesting to see kind of how they come out of that. They haven't had a week off since after South Carolina, so I know, it is good for them to be able to kind of nurse some minor injuries. Maybe they have to back to full health, but it is also interesting whenever you're playing a completely different schedule every week, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I have 6 days off. What do I do now? So.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That will be something to watch, just kind of the energy they come out with. Do they look like they haven't played, a game in a week, or are they fired up, ready to go, and look like they're not missing a beat? So that can play a little bit of a factor. Anything else you want to chat about with Iowa State before we jump into Big 12?
No, during the home stretch of the little bit of meat and potatoes in the schedule that you have. After this, I hate using the word it gets easier, but it slightly does. You're playing teams that you've already faced once before, so such as Texas Tech. So you just got to get through these two games relatively unscathed. I'll take two losses over any injuries, so.
Because on Wednesday, February 5th, is at Kansas State, and we'll talk about that game next week. And then, you get into Tech. The only other one that I really circle is home against West Virginia, February 23. Just like we talked about, West Virginia can play defense. They're a very solid team. And then Baylor to close out
Yeah.
the season. So you do get a little bit of a breather, not quite so many ranked teams all in a row. Once you finish up against Kansas State. Well, looking at the Big 12, this was a chaotic week for women. Kansas State lost to Colorado. That was Kansas State's first game without their All-American Ayoka Lee, who suffered an injury, and she will be out for the season, as far as we understand. West Virginia lost to Arizona. And as we mentioned, TCU lost to Oklahoma State. It's so just a lot of movement there and just showing that anyone can be anyone in this conference, and that really nothing's guaranteed.
I love chaos. I don't care what sport it is. I don't care who it involves. Well, okay, I do slightly care who it involves, but like, I love chaos. And after TCU lost to Oklahoma State, I was like, wow, game against Kansas State just got that much bigger. And it's like, wait a minute, Kansas State just lost. And it became, wait a minute, the game against Baylor just got way bigger too. Like, it just seemed to kind of, every game you thought was, hey, maybe it's a big game. No, it's a big game now. There's not a team that was undefeated through Big 12 play. Whether that's because it's a league of parity or because it's a league of chaos, that's up to be decided. But either way, it's every coach has talked about it, right? And it's been asked, at least, in the games that I've been there, is what are their thoughts on the conference as a whole? And everyone's like, this is a lot better of a conference than what people think it is. The records and rankings don't show that, but the competition level does.
Well, Campbell said every game is a 40-minute fight. And he's 100% right. Just watching the Baylor game, it was so physical. Like this is a dogfight. Even when they were up 22, it was still a fight. And I'm with you. It's kind of fun to watch this chaos because suddenly every game takes on a different meaning. That game you had circled, well, now you got to like star it and color it as much as you can because it just took on that much more meaning, and six other games gained meaning. Like it's just makes it a lot more fun. So before we dive into kind of the standings in the Big 12 and some stuff like that, we're going to take a look at the poll. So TCU is still number 9, didn't move at all today. Kansas State went down 1 to number 11. So that's still setting up to be a top 15 matchup next week. West Virginia dropped down a couple spots, number 21. And Oklahoma State moved back up into the top 25 at number 24, and Baylor dropped out, but they're still receiving votes. And I think that group of, what is that, six, five teams, excuse me, that group of five teams, I think, is who you're going to see for this season being ranked for the Big 12. It's just a matter of, at the season's end, how many are in there, and who's still receiving votes.
Yeah, I mean, these are all minus Oklahoma State. I mean, these are all teams that TCU is going to play still for the season. So it's a good chance to build on your net rankings, your quad one, quad two victories. That'll play a big factor whenever it comes down to seeding for the tournament.
Yeah. Well, let's take a little bit of a look at the standings in the Big 12. So TCU is alone atop the Big 12 right now, 8-1. Kansas State is 7-1, so they just haven't played as many games as TCU. So by default, TCU's number one currently in the conference. Like we talked about earlier, Kansas State did lose to Colorado. I watched some of that game. Kansas State, you just tell, was missing their best player. And that we saw that last year with TCU when Sedona went out and they had to figure out how to play without her. And then Madison goes down. It's just hard that first game without someone who's been the centerpiece of what you're doing. So I think by the time TCU plays Kansas State, they'll have had a couple games under their belt. They'll have had several practices. I think we're going to get a as polished as can be Kansas State, considering they've lost their best player.
Yeah, you're gonna get a real good look at both of the teams that are next on your schedule this week. So be interested to see how Kansas State comes out now. Hey, you got punched in the face. How do you respond?
And they do. They play Iowa State on Thursday, January 30th. So I definitely recommend keeping tabs on that one just to see, like you said, where these two teams are at, because that's who's up next for TCU. So right behind Kansas State, you have Oklahoma State and Baylor both at 6-2. Oklahoma State does get that third place spot right now because they have a nearly 20-point win over Baylor. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If Oklahoma State goes out and lays a complete egg against Houston, but then they have a 20-point win over Baylor. If Oklahoma State plays consistent, they could easily win out on their schedule. So they're a team that you do not want to be tied with at the end of the season if you're TCU. So if you drop one, you got to hope they drop one or else they're going to have those tiebreakers over you. West Virginia, Utah, and Iowa State are all 6-3. Arizona is 5-4. Colorado, Cincinnati, 4-4. Kansas and Texas Tech, 3-6. Arizona State, 2-7. BYU, Houston, 1 win each. And UCF is still 0-8. So
They're gonna get their first one. I promise it's gonna come February 1st. It's not gonna come their next game because they unfortunately get Baylor again. Don't know who they pissed off when they made the schedule, but they do get Baylor next. But then they get Houston, and BYU. So
those are two very winnable games if you're
yeah,
UCF.
and then you get Arizona State, and then you end the season with Houston. So there's a chance you can get 4 wins because. Other than that, you still have to play Iowa State and you have to play Kansas State and you have to play Utah again. I don't know who you angered, but I'm so sorry.
Yeah, this is a brutal, I mean, Big 12 is a tough league, but yes, they particularly, the order they got was particularly nasty.
Yeah, man, I'm so sorry. It's just like I really wish TCU had the schedule instead, just because the games would be so much more fun, but. At the same time, I'm glad it isn't TCU that has it because that's a grueling schedule to go through.
Yes. So that's kind of where things are sitting now in the Big 12. And like we've talked about, you're really seeing the tiers. I'd say kind of Cincinnati down, although Cincinnati, I think, is quietly kind of playing pretty well. Definitely Kansas down. That's your bottom tier. Colorado's starting to play a lot better. Arizona's not playing too bad. So those are teams I think you got to watch out for. And they got Utah, Iowa State, West Virginia, all kind of sitting there. I don't think they're going to sneak into that top tier. They've just got too many losses, and I think there's too many variables for them. But so it's going to be fun to watch and see how this plays out as some of these games really start to take on a bit more meaning and a bit more emphasis.
Yep.
So I mentioned earlier, Iowa State, Kansas State play this week. That's definitely a game to watch. And then I would keep tabs on personally Oklahoma State at West Virginia. TCU has yet to play West Virginia. Oklahoma State won that first meeting in Stillwater between those two teams. It's just another one to kind of watch because that can affect, again, those standings. If Oklahoma State sticks with two losses, they're going to be breathing down TCU's neck. Anything else you want to chat about with Big 12 or national news?
You get into the home stretch of the season now. Like, and end of the same way I have been is if you haven't been to a game yet, please. Like, this isn't a team that has promised to always be here. Even in men's basketball, like, TCU is not a basketball school. This is a chance as a fan, an alumni, just a person who lives in Fort Worth, like, come see some really, really elite level players play their sport and compete.
I mean, like we talked about earlier, this is a special team, and I think some of it you have to be there to see just how special it is. The way the girls interact with each other in warm-ups and cheering for each other and the crowd, like you're talking about, just the way they're interacting with everything, it's different and it's really special. So the next opportunity to see this team in person at home is going to be February 8 versus Tech. But if you just want to be able to just watch them, keep tabs on them, February 2nd, 3 o'clock at Iowa State on FS1 is their next game. So definitely keep tabs on all that. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. For JD Andrus, I'm Tori Couch. You're listening to Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.